Hi, and welcome to Consider This. I'm Sharad Kutan here in Johor. Johor, of course, goes to the polls on the 12th of March, and the hustings are heating up. But there are issues that are going to outlast the polls and the political enthusiasm, and these are development issues. They're very deep and have lasting implications for the state. So today I'm going to be talking to two people about Johor and trying to get a better understanding of what the issues might be. First up, we have Eddie Suresh. He is with the UN Global Compact Network, Malaysian Brunei. He's the Johor State Director. Eddie, thank you so much for joining me on the show. Help us understand how to look at Johor in terms of development issues and what are the challenges for the state.
I think it's an interesting time for Johor as we are coming out of the pandemic as well. And the question now comes down to how we're going to move forward, right? So do we talk about development per se, or do we look at sustainable development? Now that changes the conversation a bit more, right? And I think the way to move forward will be to look at sustainable development as being part of the backbone of how we are going to move forward, right? And it's important to look at the environment, social, and governance aspects of how we are going to move forward. So I think it's an interesting time for Johor because now we get to move forward post-elections, post-pandemic. Now the question is, what will be the steps that we're going to take in order for us to progress holistically?
Right, okay. So the question, of course, is until this point, and perhaps until the point of the pandemic, what characterized development in Johor? Was it characterized by sustainability? Was it ad hoc, or was it driven by particular stakeholders and interest groups rather than one that had a broader kind of buy-in from all stakeholders, including the population? How would you characterize it?
I think I will also like to tap into the Sustainable Development Goals to answer this question. I mean, when we look at SDGs 17, which is Partnership for the Goals, then you get a good mix of participation, right? You've got community participation, you've got civil society organizations also participating, and private sector is also playing their part. So when you look at development, of course, you have governments coming up with policies, and the Johor State has been coming up with interesting policies to align sustainability into the way forward. But most importantly, are the people also understanding the articulation of the subject, right? And the sophistication of understanding how to implement it as well. So it's good to see that there is a good movement of mix. You know, you have the civil society organizations also playing their part in making sure that the development is holistic, that no one is left behind. And then you have the private sector coming in, making clear and achievable targets on their end on how they are playing a part to make sure that the development that is happening is also sustainable in terms of the impact on the environment and so on.
Right, but of course, when we look at some of the headline development projects in Johor, I think Forest City and the reclamation, island reclamation in the Straits of Johor, I think kind of stand out. And then that was very controversial, deeply politicized, right? So if you put that against what you're saying now, right? I mean, more kind of the ideal scenario. How much will going back to business as usual be a bad move for Johor?
I think business as usual is out of the question for now. We have to look at business unusual now. And moving forward, if we were to do the same things that we have done before, it's not going to work. I mean, if we look at in terms of domestic investments, right, Johor has fell to the sixth place. And in terms of foreign investments, Johor is now at the eighth place nationwide, which means that we have to come up with if I may say, you know, pedantic approaches, looking at fine details and not just giving overarching statements that, you know, we are going to move to forward with sustainability, or we're going to move forward and create economic robustness without actual plans of details on how we are actually going to do it. So I think it's important to move together, but at the same time, look at the details on how we're going to get it done and how we're going to achieve it.
Right. What are the pain points for this new way forward, right? Who lose out in it? And more importantly, what is the capacity for the current stakeholders to actually deliver on such, you know, plans?
It's an important question that you're asking because everyone looks at the cost of development, right? So even if you're going to ingrain sustainability into development, then there's going to be new costs. But I would like to take the approach of looking at it from the lost of opportunity perspective, you know. So if we don't ingrain, for example, sustainability into our way forward, right, then there will be lost of opportunities that we are looking at. And the loss of opportunity justify the need to invest into planning sustainability as part of the way forward, right? So if not, you're going to lose out. Globally, you have investors asking for ESG risk assessments, and also you have conscious consumers now also demanding to have products or services that are sustainable, right? So when you factor in the cost, you're also looking at it more of an investment point of view, whereby you don't lose out in terms of opportunities, right? So it's a good balance, and if you don't do it now, then that's what you're losing. You know, so the lost opportunity is something that we have to definitely
look at. So that's your argument against people who say the cost is too high to take on new approaches. But okay, Johor is a state within the Federation. It, of course, is very proudly so, kind of sees itself as, you know, some autonomous. But Johor has to contend with Kuala Lumpur and the national plans. It also has to contend with Singapore right on the border, right? So how does Johor negotiate, do you think, these things? I mean, and are there incentive structures being created either at the federal level or because of our relationship with, say, Singapore, that are going to invariably shape the way Johor negotiates the future?
Definitely. I think the Singapore factor is very important for Johor. And I think Johor also sees itself as a complementing factor to Singapore, right? And if I may add, competing with Singapore perhaps is not the angle that we will be looking at, but complementing the entire approach is something that is very important. So federal government has its agendas and its plans, but I think on a local level, it's important to see how local councils, for example, MBJB or MPPG, you know, they are also understanding that we have to complement Singapore. So for example, Singapore has a net zero ambition, right? And this will eventually cascade down to supply chain. And Johor, many companies in Johor actually supply to Singapore, which means that, you know, a license to operate for us will eventually mean that we will also need to adopt some principles from Singapore. And for us to continue doing business with them, we will have to change our approach as well. So it's an interesting mix on how we are moving towards the next phase of things. But understanding that we want to complement what Singapore is already doing changes our positions as well, whereby we will need to take in some of their values as part of our principles to move forward as well.
Right. Because we are in campaign season, and there are now a whole raft of manifestos about how Johor is going to move forward, without necessarily kind of commenting on the various manifestos, what would you, as a Johorian, as somebody who's voting, whose family is here, what do you think any of the coalitions, whoever wins and whatever government is formed, can immediately start putting in place in order to address the kind of issues on the side of environment or sustainability or the kind of social needs that have developed?
I think it's important to look at from the economic perspective as well. As you are aware, Johor has taken a little bit of a beating thanks to the pandemic, right? So I think it's important to see what will be the plans that the elected leaders are going to come up with in terms of making the economy of Johor more robust, right? So we've had issues in terms of poverty, for an example, if I were to tap into that. In 2019, our relative or absolute poverty was at 0.2%. And post-pandemic, you know, we went up to about 2.5%. So that means that we are having issues in terms of poverty, which now comes back from economic issues as well, right? So we've had about 14 hotels in Johor Bahru that have closed down, which means that, you know, there are thousands of people who have lost jobs. So I think high on everyone's mind will be how will we move forward in terms of economic robustness? You know, will there be new job opportunities? It's not just creating or upskilling people, but at the same time giving them the opportunity to land a job that suits what they upskill themselves for, and having that opportunity to have new business opportunities as well. So I think it's important to have that economic question inside whoever is coming in as the elected.
Right, because, I mean, this is slightly maybe a political or philosophical question, is that there's an electoral cycle, and it often drives government priorities. And if job generation is one of them, because, you know, unemployed people are unhappy people, then the question is, will the state be opting for the first person who comes and say, I'm going to invest money, rather than the best person that, or the person with the best project for the kinds of long-term goals? What do you think, what would your suggestion be to government in terms of balancing both immediate needs and the future needs?
My selfish intentions, if I may say that, would be to, you know, ingrain sustainability in everything. You know, if it's development, then it should be sustainable development. If it's policy, then it should be sustainable policy, right? So I would like to see sustainability be incorporated in everything. And when we say sustainability, we are also looking at ESG, right? Environment, social, and governance. So we don't want just economic rhetorics coming out, but we also want them to address environmental issues. You see, Johor, for the past 13 years, from 2005 to 2018, our surface temperature has increased by 6.7 degrees. And we have climate-related incidences happening in Johor. We are prone to flooding. We've had heat spells. We've got crop cycle disruptions. You know, we've got many issues when it comes to climate change. So we also need the voice to campaign for climate-related issues and, you know, climate change, and we have to rise to the challenge of climate as well, and from the social aspect as well. So, you know, it's a good mix. So perhaps putting sustainability and ESG frameworks into the entire approach as we move forward is very important.
All right. Thank you so much for being on the show, Eddie. I've been speaking to Eddie Suresh, Johor State Director for UN Global Compact Network Malaysia and Brunei. We'll be back with more on Consider This. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Sharad Kutan. We're here in Johor. And despite the hustings, there are issues that go beyond party politics. And that has to do with development. We're going to be talking to the next guest, Manohar Johnson. He's a partner with PricewaterhouseCoopers in Malaysia, in Johor Bahru's office. And we're going to be talking about one of the stakeholders in the development game, which, of course, is the business community. Manohar, thank you so much for being on the show. We've been talking about development plans and how best to move forward. And recovery is obviously the key word. It's a buzzword now, but that often hides things, right, about what were the givens, as it were. Johor as a state and its development, as you see it, what characterized Johor's development previously and what might it move on to?
Thank you so much, Sharad, for inviting me to the show today. I guess as someone who's not a Johorian but has lived here for almost the past 6 years, one of the interesting things I've found is that Johor is a very livable city. A lot of the development that has taken place in the past, especially in the Iskandar region project, has really brought Johor on par to be like other states, and especially the developed areas even in like the Klang Valley. And I guess what has characterized the past has been a lot of following Malaysia's industrialized nation model in bringing in FDIs, building up capacity in manufacturing, and so on. But over the years, that's also something that has needed to change. As Johor looks forward to the post-pandemic era, the development needs will be different, and it has to take into account some of the global trends that are currently coming into play.
Yeah, let's talk about those global trends, because often, you know, when politicians or concerned citizens talk about where Malaysia needs to go, we kind of think of it in sort of national terms, as if Malaysia can, you know, by its own desire, move in a direction, when in fact we are connected to global supply chains and we are located in the, you know, an international division of labor that sometimes locks us in. So there is wiggle room, but maybe not as great as we think there is. So I want to ask you about that. What are the limitations? If we plot something like, say, sustainable development for Johor, what will be the limiting factors in the creation and design of those plans?
I guess some of the limiting factors really are what I would call self-inflicted. So if we set out a plan that wants to create a sustainable trade hub, Johor is probably well placed for it. From a landmass perspective, it has got plenty of land. It's also got very viable ports because of its location. amongst the sea trades of the world. But at the same time, to be sustainable, you would also have to see what areas Johor can play best in within that sustainable place. For example, agriculture. Land is plentiful, so creating a food hub or creating next-gen type of crops is something that can build the state up as part of the development. But how do you get the right kind of crops in place to grow the industry that is needed here?
Right. So in Malaysia's development history, and it's a big topic, and I don't think we have time for that, but because, you know, we have relied on foreign direct investment from many sources, right?
Yes.
Japan was a huge boon for us as they were exporting their capital. Today, what are the opportunities for Malaysia? We know China is a big player in the region, and China has become, I think, the top four investor in Malaysia through its state-owned enterprises and such. But what are the options for a state like Johor in designing its own economic path?
So I would say, Sharad, that in terms of designing its own path forward, two areas worth considering is really in the logistics and healthcare sector. In the logistics, we all know that with the rise of e-commerce, online buying, shopping on, example, Lazada, etc., there's going to be a whole need for warehouses and fulfillment hubs. And Johor, by virtue of its strategic location, does have the opportunity to offer that to global players, either on an ASEAN or even on an Asia-Pacific basis. The other area, of course, is healthcare. One of the things that stands out for Johor, of course, is its tourism. And so when we think about medical tourism, for example, or even aged care, maybe the same factors that made me think that Johor or JB is a very livable city could equally attract retirees, not just from other parts of the world, but even from within Malaysia itself.
Right, so there is Malaysia, it's the federation. Johor is one of the states of the federation. Is the federal structure going to be an inhibiting or enabling factor for Johor as it plots out these plans?
I think working in partnership, and in some ways, I guess, what has served Johor well ever since Merdeka, I think all things are possible. A lot, I guess, of the ideas that Johor can move forward does not necessarily involve rewriting the constitution or making one party give up certain rights, you know, at the expense of the other. Working collaboratively can still ensure that Johor uses its strengths to drive the state forward and at the same time also contributing to the national agenda and coffers.
Right, so it's a kind of win-win in the way you put it. What are, again, you know, sort of the limiting factors for Johor? Johor, many states, you know, have a small revenue base. It's something that perhaps means that they're reliant on the federal government for major infrastructural development. We want to talk about the fiscal space for Johor. What do you see as the challenges there?
Yeah, I do agree. The fact that Johor's budget is only close to $2 billion against a federal budget that is in excess of $300 billion does itself tell you where the ability to fund development projects or upskilling projects really will come from. But I think Johor itself can use the sources of revenue that it has under its control to improve and diversify. One interesting area, really, when we talk about environment, which I think you know, Eddie was sharing a little earlier on, was in the area of carbon tax, for example, or carbon pricing. Is that something the state can look into as an arena where it probably gives incentives to corporates or businesses that are working towards sustainable goals and at the same time a bit of a stick for companies that are pollutants?
Right, and can do this independently of federal legislation?
Well, there would be some collaboration and mechanism that would be needed, but some of these could potentially even be done at the state level, given that the state controls things like business licenses, the issuance of land, for example, and certain other things that are within the purview of the state.
Right. So you mentioned upskilling, and that's a really important issue, because to drive so much of these development plans, you need the right people. In terms of the talent game, where does Johor stand, and what does it need to do in order to strengthen its leverage in this, what actually is the global game, isn't it, of talent?
I agree. It has always been a challenge. And that's why when we talk about the brain drain to Singapore, the fact that you've got several hundred thousand Johorians working in Singapore does exacerbate the issue of talent and upskilling. Currently, I think Johor has about a quarter of its population that is considered skilled, and probably another 50 or 60% that are semi-skilled. So
Is that a good ratio?
Probably not. If it really wants to move into the high-income nation or high-income state status, I think it really needs to up its game in establishing additional opportunities, not just for people to upskill, but then bringing in the right FDI that allows for these people to live and work in Singapore as opposed to looking elsewhere.
Right. Okay. So, living, working in Johor, I imagine, is the issue, of course, will be, you know, when borders open, and I'm thinking primarily of the causeway, will we go back to business as usual? Is that the most likely scenario? Because it's the least painful, as it were. Borders with open with Singapore, and basically people rush back to those high-paying jobs in Singapore.
I think it's probably going to be a mixture. Definitely not going to be a full resumption of pre-COVID kind of status. You would definitely see an increase in tourists and tourism dollars coming in from Singapore because of all that pent-up energy of not being able, you know, to have perhaps their favorite laksa Johor, you know, for the past 2 years. But at the same time, for people who have not been able to travel or work in Singapore, they may not necessarily have that same job openings. Singapore, in some ways, has moved on and been able to cope without having the same numbers that they had. So the question of the upskilling will also involve what do you find for these set of Johorians, opportunities to continue then finding jobs in Johor.
Right. Very quickly, we're running out of time. I know this is a very interesting discussion, but in terms of the development, who best to lead the way, the state or the market of the industry players and businesses?
I think it always works well when it's a partnership because the state would have its overarching goals for the rakyat as a whole, but at the same time, the private sector and the corporates will be able to be the catalyst for making that change happen successfully.
Thank you so much, Manu.
Thank you. You.
That was Manohar Johnson, partner with PricewaterhouseCoopers in Malaysia. And that ends our show tonight. I'm Sharad Kutan, only on Astro 1E. We'll be right back.